Thank you for connecting with the Radio Today programme. This week, it's a Radio 3 special. Now, don't go running away thinking it's all going to be too difficult. This is a celebration of some very interesting work that is done on Radio 3 in the speech area. We'll be talking about Between the Ears, which celebrates its 20th birthday this coming weekend. But first, let's go to Salford.
The Radio Today programme with Audioboo.
It is the Radio Today programme. I'm Trevor Dan and I'm in Salford. And what happens when you come to Media City is you bump into people who are making radio shows, some of whom listen regularly to this podcast. And here's one of them. It's the legendary Bard of Barnsley. It's Ian McMillan. How are you, Ian?
I'm very well, Trevor.
And have you been doing The Verb?
Yes, just come out of The Verb, which was a fantastic show this week. And what I like about The Verb is, at the start of The Verb, I always buy apples for the guest. I say, here, have an apple. Because, as you know, you can eat an apple, then broadcast. But at the end of the show, we always have a bit of cake. And we go, have some cake. And it's fantastic. So we always start the show with apples, and we end the show with cake, which is how all shows should go, I think.
Well, maybe this is something we should talk about. Because, of course, The Verb is on Radio 3.
Yes.
Two words we don't often use on this podcast. Are all Radio 3 programmes graced with apples and cuisine?
I think they should be, because I always think it's a great thing. You know, it sometimes amazes me that I'm on Radio 3, because I've done a lot for Radio 4 and for lots of other radio stations. And I remember when they offered me The Verb 12 years ago, and I was in a hotel in Bournemouth. I was doing a gig in Bournemouth, and the phone rang, and it's this producer saying, we'd like to try out for this new speech programme on Radio 3. And I was genuinely frightened. I don't often get nervous, but I was nervous. I thought, Radio 3, that's the big boys, that's the... And so then I did a couple of pilots, and then they said, yes, we'd like to start this show called The Verb on Radio 3. And what interests me so much about Radio 3 is just the misconceptions people have about it. A lot of people say, oh, it's like Classic FM, isn't it? It's like Classic FM without the adverts, people say. People assume that Radio 3 is wall-to-wall classical music. But, of course, some of the best speech programmes you can get, I think, on the air are on Radio 3. Night Waves. I think Night Waves is like listening to In Our Time on Pro Plus. I really do. It's the most intellectually stimulating programme, some fantastic drama. And then I started thinking about it, you know, when I was nervous in this hotel in Bournemouth. And I remembered as a lad listening to Radio 3, listening to things like, I can vividly remember being off school as a teenager, and in the middle of the afternoon, there was a programme of avant-garde jazz at 4:20 on a Tuesday. You think, wow, that's all right. And then there was a documentary about the blues, a kind of road documentary, again in the middle of the afternoon. And you think, gosh, Radio 3 really is a cultural channel. World music, jazz, spoken word, a lot of female presenters, you know, which people always on about, there are not enough female presenters. There's plenty of them on Radio 3. Sarah Walker, Sarah Moore Peach, lots of them, Fiona Talkington. And you think, and you wish, when people say to me, I like you on Radio 4, you go, look, just turn the dial that way a little tiny bit.
Now, The Verb that you've talked about, it's a weekly show. Now, we're very used to programmes that celebrate music of all sorts of genres. And yours is, I think, a programme that celebrates words, doesn't it, in all sorts of genres? It's a celebration of the written word, the spoken word, speech, talk, without being about triviality in the sense of a talk show. Would that be about right?
It's right. Its strapline is the cabaret of the word. And that's what they always wanted to call it. And it came out of two programmes. There was a programme called Books Abroad, presented by Tibor Fisher. And that was a fantastic show. It was on a Saturday night on Radio 3. And Tibor Fisher would go to a bookshop in the Ukraine. And he'd get these books and he'd say, look, this is what they're reading in the Ukraine this week. And that was a fantastic show. Then there was a show called Work in Progress. And that was a little five-minute bit before a morning concert. There was people's work in progress, people writing new stuff, and they thought, let's combine that in a show that celebrates world books, world writing, and work in progress. And so, that's what The Verb is. So each week we'll commission a new piece of writing, either a poem or a story. We'll have a work in progress, often from a writer. We'll talk about language in all kinds of different ways, and we're all meant to... What I like about it is we're all there. We're all sitting around the table as much as we can. We get them to come up to Salford, they sit around the table, we give them an apple, and they sit and they talk widely about... And it does, it celebrates language in all its forms, which is great. And the other thing that's great, of course, is that a chap with a voice like mine is on Radio 3. And that's because of Roger Wright, the controller, who set me on. He set the great Andy Kershaw on to do his show. And he said, you know, let's make it into a truly national station. So I still get people heckling me from cars about my voice. I was walking through the middle of Barnsley, and this is true, this car slowed down. This man wound the window down. He went, "Hey, Matt Millen." I said, "Yeah." He says, "You're on the radio." I said, "Yeah." He said, "You're on the television." I said, "Yeah." He said, "You write poems." I said, "Yeah." He said, "You speak in that voice." I went, "Yeah." He said, "You're shite." And he drove off.
People who follow you on Twitter, Ian, will know that you're not a driver, are you?
No.
And so therefore, it's not surprising that we're walking towards the tram. What is it about trains that gets you going?
Well, I like the fact that they are a kind of narrative. They're a story. They're a novel. You know, you get on a train, you've got no idea who you're going to meet. You've got no idea who you're going to see. That somehow the journey is based around language, because you get people telling it. The man talks to you. There's a guard on the train from Barnsley to Sheffield who calls Castleford Cas Vegas, and he calls Pontefract Ponte Carlo, and you get all that celebration language. But also you can see things. You can look out the window and see things. I remember vividly getting the train from Sheffield to Manchester late at night, and there was a woman in a house, and she's looking at the train, and she suddenly opened her shirt and she had nothing underneath. You think, blimey, that's... Because you're cutting into people's lives, and that's what I like about them. Whereas if you're driving, you can't see. My wife drives, and I say, "Did you see that thing there?" She said, "Of course I didn't. I'm looking at the road." And I think that the train is a perfect medium for the poet. In fact, I made a show about for Radio 4 once called Poets Don't Drive, and it was all about all the different poets, because most poets don't drive, you see. Roger McGough doesn't drive, John Hegley doesn't drive, and the climax of the show was me having a driving lesson in the car park at Barnsley FC, and it was the most frightening thing I've ever done. You can hear the instructor going, "Ian, slow down, I'll slow right down, slow down, as I'm approaching the wall." So yeah, I don't drive. And what it gives me time to do is think and listen, because that's what radio's about all the time, thinking and listening.
One of the things that you do listen to, I know from, again, from following you on Twitter, is you listen to a lot of podcasts. Mm. Which ones would you recommend? We'll have people listening to this who think, what else is on there? And I know there are some specifically radio ones you like, but I guess there are others too.
Yeah, I like listening to Monocle 24. I think Monocle 24 does some fantastic podcasts. They take a different view to the BBC. They're often more style-based. I remember listening to them talking about the riots in 2011, and they managed to put a kind of style spin on the riots, which is very odd. But the three of their podcasts in particular, The Stack, is a fantastic podcast. That's a weekly programme about printed word, and particularly magazines. It's a very interesting programme where they just discuss new magazines. So The Stack, The Urbanist is really good. That's a programme about the urban landscape. Really thoughtful pieces about urbanism. And the other one is The Menu, and The Menu is a fantastic food-based programme. And they're one-hour programmes, so I download those. I listen a lot to one called 3%. 3% is an American podcast. The trouble with it, a lot of American podcasts think that we haven't got such a long attention span, so they have to put a bit of soft rock behind it all. And it's 3% is two guys, it's normally just two fellas arguing about books in translation, because only 3% of books in America are translated books, and it's a good book-based programme. So there's 3%. And what's the other one? Bad at Sports. You ever heard Bad at Sports? Bad at Sports. It's I think it's out of Chicago. And that's a huge, long podcast. It lasts for hours. And again, it's people talking about contemporary art. And it's fantastic. I mean, I love contemporary art, but these people talking about it. But again, they'll go, "Welcome to Barrett's Post." But this is blooming saxophone in the background. You think, in a minute, they'll fade the saxophone down and they'll start talking. And what they do is they start talking over the saxophone.
What's that one you were telling me about that's to do with radio shows from all over the place?
What is it called? It's called All About Radio. It's called All About Radio. It's an American one. And I thought it would be like Radio Today or Radio Stuff. But it turns out to be kind of, it's like a parish magazine. As far as I can see, it's a parish magazine for radio, where they go, the transmitter in Albuquerque is not looking so good this week. I think that's, you might have to quote me on that, Trevor, because I haven't listened to it for a bit, and perhaps every other one isn't like that. But try that one. If you like, because of course I listen to radio stuff, and you listen to Radio Today. And the trouble, what I like about things like Radio Today and radio stuff, is that, as you know, you think, I'm the only person in the world who's interested in this. And you think, wait a minute, there's some other people here. I've never found time yet to go to any of these radio conferences, and I will do, I promise I will, because then you realise, it's a bit like being a chap who collects, I don't know, matchstick models of the HMS Victory. You think, I'm the only one in Britain who likes these. But in fact, there's quite a lot of us, aren't there? That's the nice thing, there are a lot of us who like radio, and sometimes we get together. And that's a funny thing as well, because as you know, radio's meant to be a solitary thing. I listen to my neighbour's radio, because he has it turned up very loudly. Mr Lowe, he's quite deaf, and he likes Radio 3, he likes opera, so I listen to his. But it's often just you in a room, and it's just nice to imagine you can get together with these people. So I would recommend those podcasts, I definitely would. The other one I like is the Guardian's Media podcast, I do like that. And there's an interesting one called the Freelance Web. Have you heard that? Now, that appears to be done through a megaphone. The content is fantastic, but the actual production values aren't that great. And they don't mind me saying that, because I listen to it, but they're doing things like... It is odd that you think that because it's a podcast, it would have to sound good. Now, listen to those on my morning stroll. My morning stroll takes me 45 minutes from my house down the hill, back up the hill, back to my house, and you can usually get at least most of a podcast in on your morning stroll.
Ian, yes. The tram awaits. We must let you go. It's very nice of you to contribute to the Radio Today programme. That was Ian McMillan. Check him out on Radio 3 every week on The Verb. Let's have some radio news now, shall we, from Roy Martin.
The Radio Today programme with Audioboo.
This week, Graham Bryce has been promoted to Group Managing Director for Bauer Media's Place Portfolio, Northern England, Scotland, Magic Network North and Greatest Hits Network Scotland. Rolls off the tongue, Graham. He's been at Bauer since 2009 and we wish him all the best in his new role. Also this week, BBC Radios 1 to 4 turned 46 this week, and of course we celebrated in our usual style by posting a very deep, thought-considering, in-depth interview with all the... No, we didn't. We posted a load of old Radio 1 jingles and it went down a storm. In fact, it was the biggest story of the week so far. So that's telling us more jingles, less management moves. The biggest event of the year so far for Classic FM at the Albert Hall last week was cancelled due to smoke. Or was it a small fire? But there's no smoke without fire, so maybe there was. Who knows what happened there? Maybe it'll come out in time. And we have a brand new app. This is exciting news because this one actually works. And that's the very latest from radiotoday.co.uk. I'm Roy Martin.
Thank you, Roy. It's the Radio Today programme. I'm Trevor Dan, and we've moved from Salford to London. We're in Broadcasting House, and we're going to pick up on what Ian was saying about Radio 3. He says some people think it's just Classic FM without the adverts, but there's a lot more to Radio 3 than just the music, and that's why it's got a head of speech. And he is Matthew Dodd, and he's joined us. Hello, Matthew.
Hi, Trevor. Hello.
Also with us is Alan Hall, renowned producer, multi-award-winning producer of top-quality speech stuff on Radio 3, now of Falling Tree Productions, but previously a Radio 3 producer yourself.
Yeah, way back, 15 years ago.
Okay, yep. So we're going to talk about speech on Radio 3, and some people, as we were saying, might think that that was a conversation that would last about 30 seconds, but in fact you do a lot, don't you? And you do a lot of creative storytelling and a lot of using sound to tell stories.
Yeah, I mean, I think what I would say is, to begin with, that obviously Radio 3 is about music and the arts, and the talking bits are very much in our arts output. And obviously we have world music, we have jazz as well. And I think there's a, you know, there's a belief in Radio 3 that, and this is, it's not something that is distinct from our music, that we're interested in commissioning new work, that we're interested in opening up areas of the arts and artistic experience to audiences that they might not have a chance to hear elsewhere. And that we have parts of our schedule, you know, like Saturday evening, where we can push things a little bit further, you know, always with the audience in mind, but which allow us a bit of space to do something different. And Between the Ears is part of that. So, I feel it's at the heart of what Radio 3 does. I mean, it's also interesting that obviously, you know, Radio 3 historically had a very strong link to this sort of thing. It grew out of the third programme, and in the 1950s and 60s, people were experimenting with sound and drama, poets like Louis MacNeice and so on. This is at that time when they were trying to develop a kind of artistic audio world, and Radio 3, the third programme, was at heart of it even then.
So we think about speech, don't we, largely, I think, on the radio as being reportage. We think about speech as being journalism. It's about, oh, there's something going on in the arts or on the stage, we must talk about it. And what I think you're doing with a lot of your programming is you're making an artistic statement. You're inviting artists to express themselves in sound.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely right. And I mean, I think we do both, But I think that, you know, that because Radio 3 has so much performance through its music, it's natural for us to then be listening to performance, as it were, whether it be poets, whether it be authors reading their work, and whether it be, you know, radio producers making original work. I mean, we really want, you know, Radio 3 is part of the kind of artistic network of the country. And so part of that is not just reporting on things, it's also commissioning new work. And I think that's, again, that's where Between the Ears fits in.
So Between the Ears is celebrating its 20th birthday. Alan, you've been involved in this for a very long time, and you've won many awards for the kind of programmes that you make. You've got some clips. Would you like to introduce one, and then perhaps we could talk about it?
The one I'd introduce, I suppose, would be the opening of Knoxville. This is the programme Knoxville Summer of 1995. This is a programme I made in, I think, the third series of Between the Ears. And it's picking up, actually, on what Matthew said. There is part of it is performance. Part of it is a piece of music by Samuel Barber. Another part of it's a documentary. So it could have been a performance piece, or it could have been a documentary, a Sunday feature piece, because it's a documentary about the making of that work, that musical work, which is setting a text. And the text was written by James Agee, and James Agee grew up in Knoxville, Tennessee, in the first part of the 20th century. But the third layer to the whole, to the piece, is that it's a soundscape. It's a sort of an impression of the city as is, you know, at the latter end of the 20th century. So it's these three levels working together, where one isn't necessarily reporting for fact. One is, in a sense, kind of reporting feeling. So it's about the feeling of a space. It's about impressions rather than necessarily concrete things. The opening now sounds quite kind of complicated and over elaborate. I might slow things down, you know, 15 years on, but in 1995, this was how it came out.
Here I am sitting on the porch, bringing up Junior, watching the world go by.
We are talking now of summer evenings.
We are talking now of summer evenings in Knoxville, Tennessee.
In the time that I lived, they're so successfully disguised to myself as a child.
It's getting to be time of evening when the people sit on their porches.
Dear Mr. Barber, this is intended to authorize you to use for musical setting the text of Knoxville, Summer of 1915, or whatever portions of it you may choose. Very truly yours, James Agee.
People go by, things go by, the loud car, quiet.
Here's a score of Knoxville, first performed by Eleanor Stever. She commissioned the work. It's a perfectly American piece.
107.7 WIVK-FM, and the official station of summer.
President will be talking family values with Vice President Al Gore this morning in Nashville.
Barber grew up in Westchester, a little town outside of Philadelphia. Clapboard houses with porches. And when you sit outside and it's quiet, you don't have the same kind of noises that you have in the cities now.
That's a clip from Knoxville, one of the Between the Ears award winners. Let me ask you this, Alan. What can you do with sound that probably you can't do with film?
Well, wow, that's a big question, isn't it? It's interesting. I mean, there's a quote from one eminent film director that, you know, often you'll find in making a film that 50% of the scene is actually contained in the sound. He says, no, not 50%, 80%, no, not even 80%. Actually, sometimes 100% of the scene is in the sound, not necessarily in the visuals. The thing about sound which gets me is that there's a kind of potency to it. It kind of, it takes you by surprise. I've used the image somehow of depth charges being dropped, and these sort of depth charges of sound that are dropped into people's consciousness, where they're not directed by, literally by a director forcing imagery on them, but these sounds which can sometimes be ambiguous. You know, we all know in radio that, you know, if you want the sound of a coin spinning, you probably have to do something that isn't a coin spinning to get that sound, because the real thing isn't quite as real as the pretend thing. So sound has a kind of potency, and you're never quite sure how it's going to kind of explode on the canvas of the listener, between the ears, what associations they're going to bring with it, especially when you combine things. This is where it kind of becomes like, you know, poetry is where you take a word that means one thing and a word that means another, and together they created this other thing, which was unexpected. And in sound, that happens as well, and in radio, just by combining an atmosphere, you know, a street sound with a bit of music or a bit of speech. It just sort of takes on a different kind of significance.
Here's the thing I wanted to ask you about. When I spoke to Robert Krulwich from Radiolab, he said that one of the things that had surprised him and Jad when they started making them was that although the natural audience to their radio station was older, Radiolab was being consumed by a lot of young people. And I wonder whether, in a sense, some of the stuff that you do for Between the Ears really ought to be on a Radio 1, really ought to be shouted about in a kind of youth media context.
I think it's made absolutely for an iPod generation, people with things in their ears, listening in their ears. In fact, on Shortcuts, the series we do on Radio 4, we've got a piece coming up where a guy has a cochlear implant and he can literally plug his iPod directly into his head so the sound is happening. I mean, that is extraordinary. But for Between the Ears, when it started, 1993, we didn't have, you know, all this technology. We weren't consuming music in this way. We certainly weren't consuming radio in this way. 20 years on, it's actually putting crafted radio features, that's a rather old-fashioned term, isn't it, crafted radio, but it's putting those kind of imagined sound pieces, and Radiolab's very good at it in the States, and there are some other people around the world who are doing it in different ways, in very exciting ways. The Australians are very keen on all this. It's putting it on the same level, really, for consumption as music. So it's about musical listening. It's not everyday listening. It comes again back to that idea that one, you're not listening necessarily for fact, you're listening for feeling.
So, Matthew, how can you tell more people that Radio 3 does this kind of thing and that it's not some kind of artsy ghetto for, you know, snobby university types?
Well, I don't think it is that, definitely not. I think that, well, the thing I would say, first of all, in response to your question to Alan, is that, you know, we have a huge opportunity now, as Alan said, because actually I think that the world of exposing people to sound and what it can do in a more adventurous and interesting way is a tide which we've seen in the art world, you know, increasing interest in sound art, people going to galleries, listening to things, and actually developing their ability to listen, perhaps, because unlike, you know, visuals, they've been exposed to them all the time. And that's something that the, you know, technological change has really helped. So it's a huge opportunity for us to do that. In terms of what we can do, I mean, you know, what the things that we really want to do, which is to get the word out to people through, you know, this new digital world, which has opened up sound, which helps us so much to tell people that there's material here that they can listen to, whether that be through kind of communities of people who are interested as around Radiolab and so on, you know, that we've got that stuff there. I mean, there's a variety of promotional tools, but I think it's something more than that. And I mentioned that, you know, as part of the anniversary on air, we've got a documentary about the rise of sound art. And a really big theme, as Alan says, is about trying to find a way in which sound and sound art can acquire the importance and interest of music. That's why I feel, I suppose, that Between the Ears is so right to be on Radio 3, because there is definitely the best programmes have a musicality about them. And, you know, there was a word that people used to use, composed features, which sounds a bit like the crafted features now. But what it's about you're listening to it and you can see it's something someone has really thought about, the aesthetic experience of listening to that, whatever its subject might be.
This weekend's the 20th birthday, so how are you celebrating? You've got a little series?
Yeah, we've got two opportunities. One, we've kind of hijacked the essay slot on Radio 3 and invited some really exciting people from around the world working in radio in English to play a game of consequences across a week. So it unfolds like the game. You know, there's a woman and she meets a man, and then they meet at, and he says, she says, and then there's a consequence, and that works out across the week. But also, on the Saturdays, actually starting on the very anniversary, the 5th of October, we have a four-part Between the Ears, which is being produced by, I've done parts of it, and my colleague Eleanor McDowell, and a Danish colleague who's based in the States, Pike Malinowski, who's doing something extraordinary about Harvey Keitel and meditation. We're doing a kind of connected four-parter. So it's making it bigger than the slot. That was the idea. That was the ambition, you know, to say, look, this is really worth paying attention to. There are so many different ways of telling stories, so many different ways of playing with sound and enjoying what... It's not a po-faced experience. You know, this is, it's a creative, energetic, vibrant, verve-full experience.
And added to that, what we're also doing is that on the Between the Ears, you know, website, we're putting up clips of about 10 previous editions, some of the best of Between the Ears, so that people can get a taster of, you know, over the last 20 years, some of the very nice work we had, including Knoxville, which Alan mentioned, so that people can see that, you know, there's all this fantastic material that's gone out.
Let's have another clip, Alan.
Well, I suppose we should play something from the new one that we've just finished. Shadow. This is the first part of Shadow Play. And this is coming from a place in my mind where it was quite easy to make something fey or elliptical or sort of dreamlike for Between the Ears. But I wanted to address, as I did a couple of years ago, I did a programme about child victims of sectarian violence in Northern Ireland. It's not immediately a kind of Between the Ears subject. In this one, I wanted to address the driest and hardest subject I could think of, which was the state of the economy, in a way, and really what is money and what does money mean to us and how do we value it and what do we value. And so I've got a couple of academic economists to talk about what money is and how the banking system works and why we value it the way we do and whether we should. But I've also, and this is where we underpinned it, the thing is structured around the scene from Mary Poppins, where little Michael Banks has his tuppence, which he wants to feed the birds, but his father insists that he should invest it in the bank.
And before we listen to it, because the audience to this podcast knows a thing or two about making radio, tell us how you made it. What is it on Pro Tools? Tell us something about the actual manufacturing process.
These days, I work on Sadie.
Gosh. There will be jaws dropping onto tables as you say that.
Yeah, 20 years ago, the very first one, Monument, was made on audiophile with a screen about the size of a cigarette packet. But we've given up audiophile just as I've given up cigarettes, actually. and then I've worked on Sonic Solutions, Pro Tools since, but just recently, for the last few years, Sadie. And it's a process of listening and sifting and trying things out.
Is it a very personal sort of man in garden shed thing, or do you work communally?
I worked with someone on this. I had some help from a young person, which I think is always useful.
A young person?
Someone in their early 20s who won the Charles Parker Student Award this year. And that's kind of, it just gives a different perspective on things. You know, I've done this for a long time, this radio thing, and there's a danger that one falls into the same kind of patterns and tropes. And so to have someone in there kind of just challenging and questioning and...
Quick word from Matthew.
Well, I was just picking up that. I think the future of Between the Ears, part of the future and part of the way of spreading the word is for more new, you know, younger programme makers to come and see me with ideas, and I really, really want them. You know, one of the things I say at the Radio 3 commissioning round every year, this is a slot that is driven by the producers. I want to say as little as possible about what exactly I'm looking for.
And the commissioning round is open now, isn't it?
It is open now, and I need to meet new people who can tell me for precisely the reason that we all need that creatively. And it might be that they've been working in radio a very long time but have never had a chance to do something like this, or it might be that they're, you know, as Alan said, they might be newly graduated in the world of radio, but it doesn't matter. I think we absolutely needs that lifeblood to keep going.
We should point people at the Radio 3 commissioning website, shouldn't we, where all this is laid out.
Absolutely.
For them.
Absolutely.
Matthew Dodd and Alan Hall, thank you very much. Let's have a clip from Shadow Play.
When I came to study economics, I thought, as I think a lot of people think, that economics is all about money.
Michael, I will not permit you to throw your money away.
And I was amazed to find this really isn't the case.
What happens with banks is that they make all these promises they cannot quite keep.
They wish to open an account, sir.
Oh, indeed. And just how much money do you have, young man?
I must have some. Here's a 50p piece, 5p piece. Must have some notes.
It happens, but I want it to feed the birds.
Here we go. Here's a fiver. Dollars. A few euros.
The whole financial crisis happened because the people had too much confidence in financial institutions.
While stand the banks of England, England stands.
So the whole thing has been revealed to have been a mirage, if you like.
That's a clip from Shadow Play, part of the Between the Ears 20th birthday celebration on Radio 3 this weekend. Thanks again to Matthew and Alan. It's time for some Radio Moments. Here's David Lloyd.
Radio Moments.
We start this week enjoying memories from 46 years ago and the first Radio 1 appearance from this broadcasting icon.
One of my favourite groups in the whole world that probably a great number of people have never heard of, Captain Beefheart and his magic band. And I'd like to play this one especially for Shirley, with whom I saw this group in Los Angeles. It's called Yellow Brick Road.
John Peel on his first Radio 1 show, Top Gear, this week in 1967, alongside Pete Drummond. Another legend moved this week in 1981, a new home for Kenny Everett.
Radio 2.
Yes, ladies and gentlemen, this is Cuddly Ken, and I've joined the BBC.
He's joined the BBC.
Yes, folks.
Kenny in the bosom of the establishment at the hallowed Radio 2. This hadn't always been a lucky week for Kenny, though. This week in 65, he was sacked.
This is Herbert W. Armstrong with tomorrow's big news.
They used to have a 6 till 9 show in the evenings, and they used to interrupt it every night with this taped thing from America. And it's an evangelical thing, and he tells you what horrors are in store. So when at the end of the show, I used to say sort of little, snide little comments about him, and one day he came to England, and I didn't know he was there, and I said one of my funny little things at the end of his show, and he rang Radio London and said, "Get that shit off my show!"
The first end to Kenny Everett's career this week, 48 years ago, on the Pirate Radio London. 1984 now, and until this week, there was just one UK chart show on Sundays.
But it was exciting because nobody really took it seriously in the early days, because we were up against head-to-head the BBC Radio's flagship programme on Radio 1, you know, the Top 40. And but I thought that maybe you could do a chart show in a slightly different way, and maybe with the collective responsibility of all the marketing and promotion departments and all the commercial radio stations around Britain, we could actually do something that would be significant.
Kid Jensen, the first host of Commercial Radio's network chart this week, 29 years ago. And this week at 87, a new departure for the BBC chart, as Bruno Brooks unveiled it on a Sunday for the first time. The reveal had been on a Tuesday lunchtime. A Paul Burnett generation remembers smuggling in a radio to school. Something new, too, this week, 39 years ago,
Florida,
as Commercial Radio came to Wales.
It's our aim to produce a blend of programming to entertain, inform, and above all, give you a sense of real involvement in community matters.
The launch of Swansea Sound this week in 1974.
Good morning and welcome to the first breakfast show on Swansea Sound. I'm Chris Harper, and we have 3 hours to get to know each other a little better.
A decade later, some commercial stations were getting into difficulty, and this week in 85, amidst financial troubles, Radio West in Bristol merged with Wiltshire Radio, and the mighty GWR was launched.
How about giving them radio 24 hours a day?
Hey, yeah, they'd really like that. After all, life goes on 24 hours a day. Why can't radio?
Well, it means we could give them even more of what they want to hear.
What? More local and national news?
Yeah.
More local people talking about themselves?
Right.
More community involvement? More features about sport, local history, gardening, photography?
More of their favourite...
Back then, GWR had three separate breakfast shows. Bristol presenters included Steve Orchard.
It's out today, the new Radio Times.
It's 90 years this week since the Radio Times was first published, the official organ of the BBC. It cost tuppence.
This is London calling. As the Radio Times has now made its appearance and will give you full particulars of the week's programmes in advance, this will be the last of my Saturday night talks on coming events from 2LF.
Other listing magazines weren't available. 1988 now, and something exciting at Radio 1.
This is Radio 1 FM, testing on 98.7 megahertz. Yes, Radio 1 FM is coming soon on this frequency. Switch on date is Thursday the 29th of September. No more mushy medium wave with all that interference.
Radio 1 poised to switch on FM in the southwest and west of England 25 years ago this week, just a few weeks after Bros had helped turn on the other huge FM transmitters.
It's just terrific scenes out here, a great way for Radio 1 to celebrate the first day of the big stereo switch on in the north, the Midlands and Scotland. Tonight, really, outside Radio 1, screams, smiles and swoons outside the Radio 1 studios.
And, of course, this was the week that Radio 1 had launched back in 1967.
When I got there, it was the flower power era, of course, and all those of us who had come over from the pirate ships, we were all dressed in suits and had very short hair, and all the BBC people, they were all dressed up in flower power gear, and they were desperately trying to show that they were with it, and we were trying to show that we could be establishment if necessary.
The voice of Radio 1!
Three this week in the Radio 1 Fun 30, and it comes, of course, from the movies called Flowers in the Rain. 3 minutes now past 7 o'clock on the first of the Tony Blackburn shows from Radio 1, and we have all the press the other side of the glass there. We've got absolutely everybody in the studio, the press from all corners of Clapham Common.
Radio 1, Tony Blackburn.
The launch programme from Radio 1 with Tony featured music from the Bee Gees, the Four Tops, the Moves, Simon and Garfunkel, the Supremes, and Engelbert Humperdinck. As Radio 1 launched in 67, programmes like this ended. Music Whilst You Work. This was a show launched during the war to boost productivity.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, that's the last time you'll ever hear that theme, and it's been played for many, many years. Music While You Work was played this morning by Jimmy Leach and his organolians.
So with Virgin rebranded as Absolute this week 5 years ago...
Let's do it.
Radio Hallam launching this week 39 years ago...
Well, it seems these little things are sent to try us slightly on the very first morning of a new radio station, but...
And BBC Audience Research launching this week in 1936, thanks to the appointment of a chap from an ad agency. Those are this week's Radio Moments.
You and David Lloyd, Radio Moments.
In these days of interactivity with the World Wide Web, make it easy for your listeners to share their voices with you via Audioboo. They simply download the app to their mobile device, record a boo, and send to your station. It's that simple. And just to prove a point, this ad was recorded as a boo and sent in from the corner shop. Audio Boo, sharing voices with the world.
Thanks very much, as always, David. Thank you to Roy Martin, to Alan Hall, to Matthew Dodd, to Ian McMillan. This has been a TDC production, and we'll have something equally good next week.